Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin. With guest co-host
Travis ATWA.
Hey.
Hello.
So that was you I talked to like 3 minutes ago, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Dan was kind of, the guy kind of sounded like Phil.
So 153, and then introduce everybody?
Yep, with a pause in between, so we can say something witty or libelous or somewhere in between.
Okay. To a regular host, the Mian Team.
I'm more of a preferring of the slanderous myself.
Makalua.
I'm going to need more caffeine to slander anything, thanks.
Mad Dijon.
Witty and slanderous. I wonder what we can do with that.
Daniel Quick.
Did you know I remind myself of me when I speak?
And myself, Travis ATWA, and I got nothing.
Well, saying nothing is saying something.
No, that's true, but I couldn't come up with anything witty.
It's okay. I think only Phil and Dan ever get around to doing something that witty.
Yeah, this is like, Dan ever gets around to witty.
Yeah, it may take some time, though.
I think I've just been insulted.
Let me try. I'll try harder next time.
Why do you have to be such a do-well, Mackie? I mean, try hard. So this is a Civ 4 topic started by Jordy Floor, or if you prefer, you can read it Jordi Floor, but that's probably not accurate, but you can do it. And the thread is titled, Embarked, Units Can't Defend City. Anyway, the thread reads, Hi all, after years of playing Civ, yesterday I came across a weird situation I can't believe I didn't realize before. I was invading Stalin's 5-city Russia with my infantry. I kept 3 fully loaded galleons and recently conquered Yaroslav, while another Sack of Doom was heading to attack inland Novgorod. Next turn, suddenly Yaroslav was reconquered by Stalin without any fighting, and my 9 garrisoned infantry vanished. So I guess embarked units in the city are unable to defend it. Is this true? And the word to answer this question is yes. Yes, it's true. Now, I don't know why they decided to make the game this way, but this can still be abused as of the most recent and probably final Beyond the Sword patch. I'd be shocked if we could patch at this point. That the AI will stack up large amounts of units into transports and destroyers and whatever, or frigates, galleons, depending on era, anytime they're plotting war to invade another continent. So if you see this and you time it properly, you can declare war on them, amphibiously capture the coastal city, and kill dozens of units, probably, yeah, however many it has, all without fighting them. And this is, as far as I know, the only way you can do that without otherwise nuking them, which is probably preferable, but, you know, you might not have nukes yet. So, you know, this is the next best thing. This is just to Pearl Harbor the heck out of everybody, is sink all the ships in port. So that would be the way to go, and that was in bad taste. I apologize.
Well, I was going to say that's actually an example of why you can't defend it in real life, because if you were parked on those ships and somebody came along, I don't think you could get off quite fast enough to defend.
Yeah, but this game's on such a macro scale. We don't have like a tactical combat element to it. And yeah, this becomes more of an issue of tedium than anything else. You have to keep loading and unloading your units based on whether or not you defend it. Even stronger, and a case where Firaxis has precedent for changing their game, is the AI can't handle this mechanic at all. So maybe they should defend just so the AI doesn't lose entire armies to nothing, basically.
Yeah, because the human player piling up units to go overseas, you're piling them into the city, you're not loading them until the last minute.
Yeah, but it takes an action to load, right?
Yeah, but the AI does it.
As they get there, they load it, they sit there, and then
it
they
does
go.
Take an action to load. But it's pretty rare, unless you have, like, Archipelago or certain scripts, where you can actually target city within one turn of sailing. So, usually the loading doesn't matter. If it does, you can just plan ahead a little bit and make sure that nobody can ninja destroy your stack.
Yeah, I mean, I go for the side that says, yeah, you didn't unload your units. Guess what? Too bad. They're in the boat. On the opposite side, I agree with Phil on the opposite side that the AI is not programmed to handle that situation well, and there's not likely to be a patch. So it's kind of one of those, it's a bad thing because it's not going to get patched up. Although there are tons of mods out there. I'm sure somebody somewhere has taken a look at that and made it change. But I don't think the change for allowing units to defend themselves well in stacks stacked up on galleons is a good thing, because that allows abuse of putting all of your units in a boat and then running from city to city defending without actually
moving. You can still do that. Because embarking and disembarking, if you have the boat in a city, will not use up movements. You only use movement if you move into it. The rules on that are a little odd. So you can actually still do that. And my particular gripe with this mechanic is that there is never a situation where you have units in a city like this and you wouldn't want to defend with them. It never happens. Oh, okay. If you embark a unit, you use up movement points for some reason, but if you don't have any movement points, you can still embark. I don't understand the logic behind that. And if you disembark in a city, you still have full movement points. So as long as your ships have movement points, you really can just spin ships like everywhere to defend things by unloading and loading units.
Yeah.
Anytime you have something in a game where you always want to do this, always do this, every time, no exceptions, I don't think that's something that somebody should have to defend. Because, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, I think I used that at some point to transfer armies across the planet. Just set up a series of ships and go from galleon to galleon, transferring all the units.
Yeah.
Civ 1.
That was an old topic on one of our shows. I forget which episode. It's quite a long time ago now, but we did discuss doing that, where you could load a unit and instantly have it appear on another continent in one turn via a transport shuttle.
For this particular topic, yeah, BTS has been out for how many years? And this guy's just figuring this out.
He learns new things every day, I guess.
Yeah. It's little details.
You play the game.
I would say working as intended.
It is now.
Of course it is. That bug and overflow, that's also working as intended, by the way.
That could be the episode title right there.
Working as intended?
That bug and overflow?
I like how the first person to respond in this thread is ZX0ZX, and it has he's using Shaka's avatar with the troll face replacing Shaka's face. I think that sums up the working as intended line quite well, too.
Tacky Waxon says, personally, I would have preferred the boats being kicked out of the city in a desperate attempt to flee the invasion, perhaps with a small random chance of losses. I'm assuming he's meaning then a small chance of some of the units being lost, all of the units being lost. I mean, if the ship is lost, then all the units on the ship would be lost.
Yay, more random deaths. Random. Actually, that's not a bad idea, because, I mean, seriously, if people are attacking from land into the city, then all the boats can just turn around and leave before there too many of them get killed.
Just have it do damage.
Yeah.
Oh, damage the boat?
No, damage the units that escape.
Uh-huh.
Because if you capture I don't know.
Yeah.
I like the mechanic where if you have boats in port and you capture the city, you sink them, because there you do have a trade-off. You don't have to keep your navy in port. If the navy is in port, then it's impossible to attack it without attacking the city. So I'd like to see that trade-off still exist.
Would that be the other podcast?
That would be another strategy podcast. Imagine that. And on strategy in general, too. Like, what's up with that? Seriously.
Yeah, seriously. They talk about things that aren't Civ. What's that up with? No.
Nobody will listen to that.
No, three moves ahead. They're episode 175. They were talking all about gods and kings, and their topic over on the Idle Thumbs forum got into a lot of stories about how people did different things.
Really?
Yeah, those stories tend to work better in written format.
Yeah.
Really, it was about people's opinions and views on gods and kings.
It's not worth 30. It is worth the 30. I don't know. Was there a consensus here? I don't think there was.
The consensus is there is no consensus. Therefore, there always is a consensus of some description.
What?
I'm lawyering. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, circular lawyer logic. I see.
If I was to summarize, not necessarily what people are saying, but my view of Gods and Kings, and we've talked extensively about the mechanics over the two of the last three episodes, before going into what they've said in here, I think that if you enjoyed Civilization V, you will enjoy Gods of Kings. If you were frustrated with Civilization V, but like Civilization, then worthwhile revisiting with Gods of Kings. But if you didn't like Civilization V at all, if you found nothing redeeming in it, Gods and Kings does add a lot, but in terms of some issues that you may have had with the original game, it's not a Civilization VI. It's not going back and redoing everything. So I think in that case, I'm not going to go so far as to say you're not going to like it. You would be best off getting the demo and then deciding for yourself. Don't take any review at face value, user or air quote professional.
Hey, they should take mine at face value.
Yeah, but apparently not.
And if you don't like strategy gaming, then you probably won't like Gods and Kings. Yep, I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
If you don't like strategy gaming, then wait.
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Gods and Kings, overall, I'm pretty happy with it. They didn't really fix the diplomacy, the crazy AIs, but they gave us more modifiers, and that kind of helps. So I'm pleased. And as far as people being critical of the price, like, I don't think we should say anything negative about the expansions, because anything to keep them from encouraging them to make more DLC is a good thing, in my opinion.
Gods and Kings did do something for the game in a major way. I mean, just for my own YouTube channel as an example, my viewership has tripled since Gods and Kings came out, which means that there's more people who are interested in the game than there was before for vanilla. So there's got to be something in there.
And the fact that the expansion has now been out for more than a month, that increased viewership has been sustained, yes?
Yeah.
In this thread, I think you can break down the views between negative, positive, and the ever-Canadian-esque neutral. And Mackie, actually, you already mentioned the negative one, kind of the underlying part, which was $30 is just too much for me to consider at this point. Of course, you're thinking, okay, does he think $30 is too much for this type of expansion, any expansion, what? No, that's what Rightpunk says, but Rob C. goes into a little bit more detail. Feeling pigeonholed from the early part of the game. I like games where you come to think on your feet more and react to changing conditions. I like to take things as they come. I no longer remember how the tech tree was in previous versions, but in this one it seems like you can only go so far down one branch before you have to backtrack and research everything else before you proceed through a tech tree bottleneck. Was it always like that? And I'm thinking...
Yeah?
Yeah, since the beginning of Civ 5, yes.
The techs are related to other things.
As long as you've played Civilization.
Yeah, there's always been some sort of bottleneck somewhere in the tech tree.
Five, it has cities.
No, not cities.
And units. Oh my god, units.
I mean, there has to be. The idea of having guns and building tanks and not knowing how to breed animals is ridiculous. There needs to be that.
Yeah, where's my tech tree for using magic instead of guns?
I think in Civ 5, the only one you can blatantly ignore is sailing in that line. But then again, I don't consider that a bad thing, because you can ignore it all the way up through the industrial era. Because if you're not on a water map, you shouldn't be forced to do the water-based techs. Because if you're not looking to go jump in the lake, you don't really need to worry about thinking about it.
Yeah, if you're on a landlocked map, what the hell do you need sailing for?
This world has no water, but we've discovered sailing!
Yay. I was playing around in the bathtub the other day, and I used this little sailboat, and it was the greatest thing.
On a land-based map, a city-state requests you build the Colossus. What?
There's got to be a lake around here somewhere.
Lima Whiskey, absolutely no interest in Civ 5. It shipped completely broken, and all the pre-expansion patching only managed to upgrade it to somewhat less broken.
Yeah, that's the other thing here, is depending on what it was, some of the people that are negative on it, what they didn't like about Civ 5, this may not fix what they don't like.
Yeah, but then again, if you replace Civ 4 for Civ 5 in that exact statement, it was the exact same.
Well, yeah.
There are frustrations in Civ 4 as well.
And Civ 4 ship broken, and it wasn't until Warlords, then BTS, that people started really liking it. $30 for an expansion too steep? I don't know. BTS and Warlords and all the other ones were not exactly free.
Big Chicago Bob read my mind. Steam summer sale, or even more generally, wait for a Steam sale if you honestly think the $30 is too expensive.
Yeah, they discounted it some, but it was quite enough. It was probably still too new for them to really put a deep discount on it during the summer sale.
Yeah.
Well, certainly some people will be like, hey, Steam isn't paying me to get the expansion, so it costs too much.
That is a good point, though. Steam's come down really far on Civ 5 in the past, so...
Yeah, during the summer sale, a couple of times they had it 75 off.
That's pretty incredible.
75%.
Yeah.
I said $75 off retail, lol.
Pay you 15 bucks to take it.
Yeah, it's like, if you buy it, we'll give you $25.
The neutral category from this thread, there really only were a couple that I saw. Genoa, and that's not to be confused with the city-state, says, truthfully, I wasn't planning on picking up this expansion as I was thoroughly disappointed in Civ 5 when it came out. It's unfortunate that Gods and Kings perhaps isn't the panacea the game needs, but maybe I should have been so quick to dismiss it out of hand. And I think that is a very measured and, again, Canadian-esque view.
It's a very polite answer.
It is. Troy Sion Loter says, I disagree with the assertion that Civ 5 puts the player in a straitjacket. If there's a straitjacket, then you're putting yourself in it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Challenge it if you can do that.
And then in terms of the positive, Gore Mungus, I think, had the best. I'm not saying Civ 5 is better or worse than any other installment in the series. Certain design choices have made it harder to plot Civ 5 on the line graph of increasing sophistication that provided the narrative for the franchise's development thus far, which explains, in turn, the mixed reaction as much as any metric of quote-unquote quality. In many ways, Civ 5 is more like a reboot, reimagining mechanics that have remained unchanged at the core since the beginning of the series, and reboots are always divisive, especially among fans.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not so certain about this reimagining mechanics that have remained unchanged at their core since the beginning of the series, unless we're talking about the one unit per turn. Okay, then. Or hexes. Okay, then. But...
Well, happiness is different now. The way the economy is handled is completely different now.
Yeah, but each of the civs tend to adjust. Like, each of the civs in the series have adjusted something to not be the same as before.
Yeah.
Quite a bit, actually. I think every civ has. I mean, the original civ didn't have workers, for example.
Yeah.
Settlers, little wagons out there doing roads. Oh, and the barbs come for a visit.
And terraforming later.
Yes.
Can we have that back? I miss terraforming.
Seriously.
Civ 6. Finally, we've decided to get rid of this flat 2D tech tree. That's what I'm waiting for.
Ascendancy, I remember that. It had a 3D tech tree. That was a little confusing. That may have just been the UI in that game, though.
Troy Goodfellow, who was the founder of Three Moves Ahead and is an occasional guest on that show now, and has in fact been a guest on Polycast a couple of times, said there is a lot of room for both Civ 4 and Civ 5, and Civ 5 is such a radical departure for the series in so many ways that it's easy to see where it would turn off longtime players and also take more time to mature as a game. Civ 5 is a beautiful bunch of systems that I think show the direction that Civ can go. I think that goes to maybe even what we've said in the past. It's not a matter of, do I like Civilization 4 and not like Civilization 5 or the other way around, but I like Civilization 4 and I like Civilization 5 for different reasons, and they're the first two Civ games I feel comfortable concurrently having installed on my PC and switching back and forth to play, rather than saying, okay, I'm done with Civ 3, now it's on to Civ 4. It's kind of that way with all of the other Civ titles. I didn't want to go back after the next one came out until Civ 5. And that's not being negative against Civ 5. It's just a reflection of how different they are.
Yeah, it really is almost two different games. Well, there's a lot of things that are the same. There's a lot of things that are different. I mean, especially the one unit per tile and stuff. You have to think differently than you do in Civ 4, which is build a big stack, apply liberally to enemies.
Yeah. Well, I'd hope they'd be sufficiently different. Otherwise, charging $60 for the same game again with prettier graphics would definitely get people pissed off.
You mean like Call of Duty?
Yeah. Every 8 months.
You just buy that every year.
Every 8 months, not even.
And Madden.
I was about to say, insert successive sports title here.
I would not mind buying Call of Duty again if it still worked, but they stopped having it work. And that's a big pet peeve of mine.
Huh. We stopped having your game work. You want to buy it again so you can play it, right?
Yeah, we finally fixed it. Here's another $60, please. This time with more
zombies. Compensated. Lag compensated. Lol. That's not an issue in Civ, because you don't need that real-time aspect to the same degree. I mean, I guess you can still mess with people with simultaneous turns, but you don't lose instantly, usually, because of that. It's possible, but it's not like every game where there's lag, you're just screwed.
Although it's just slow. And given that Civ is a turn-based slow game... It's not meant to be over 20 minutes.
No, but if the netcode was a little better, I don't think anybody would complain.
Yeah, it might keep a couple people
from complaining. The netcode and between turn times need to be better. I know the game's not meant to be played quickly, but that doesn't mean that a substantial percentage of your game should be spent waiting. And you look at the time that multiplayer claims turns spent, and this is not a Civ 5 unique problem, by the way. This has been going on for a while. Like, we'll play a game of multiplayer Civ 4, and we'll start at, say, 6:30 in the evening, and then we'll go until 9 or 10 or whatever. And the game is going to claim that we spent 1.5 to 2.5 hours playing the game.
Exactly.
And basically, that's the time where the game was actually accepting input from us. The rest of the time the game gives us a time listed is, you know, it's turn lag, command lag, or any other things that prevented us from actually playing. That's a pretty large portion of time spent, say, not being able to do anything. And sure, if you want to take your time in single player and plan out your actions, that's great, but yeah. You shouldn't have comparable amount of time to that, just not being able to play.
Time
that's rough.
Drumming my fingers, waiting for the computer to decide I moved that unit there. Yay!
Yeah, it should be all multiplayer-based, realistically. Still build an AI and still be able to play single-player, because that's what a lot of people are going to do. But realistically, the net code and everything else has to be one of the primary things. And from looking at it, I mean, some things just haven't changed on that respect. Now, granted, they don't seem to have a network department over there. So they might be a little slow on the uptake when it comes to conversion to all this fancy interwebby type stuff.
Yeah, I get the impression sometimes they still think this is still a lot of single player, but multiplayer has been big for years now, and we're still, guys, you're not thinking about the netcode at all? Other than, okay, the game works.
The netcode doesn't work, it doesn't work. The game doesn't work in one of its aspects.
Out of sync.
Sure, we have multiplayer.
Yeah. Multiplayer, yeah. No, not exactly.
That was a nice joke for Civ 5 for quite some time, and my understanding was that was a nice joke in Civ 4 for quite some time, too. I'm kind of glad that I joined Civ 4 well after Beyond the Sword was released, because if I hadn't, oh my gosh.
We would have heard some raging.
But more raging.
Perhaps.
Yes.
Speaking of which, raging.
Ah, I like your segue. Yes.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Why I know can raise any city I want, dang it. Especially when the AI puts them in really stupid places.
That was quite the clever segue. The next topic is raising cities, capitals, and otherwise. There's a couple posts here on the 2K forums and on the Civ Fanatic forums. On the 2K, there's actually a poll, which I'm sure will please some people, to whether or not we should be allowed to raise cities, and it looks pretty even to me. About 40% of the people saying we should be able to raise or disband any city, including our own, and another 40% saying we should be able to raise any conquered city except a capital. Me personally, I think any city, including your own, if you want to burn it, you should be able to burn it. Domination victory is pretty much the main reason that you can't. But even with that still, I think historically, if someone wanted to burn a city, they would. So I don't see why we can't.
I'm pretty sure people haven't historically looked around their capital and said, you know what? This is a pretty awesome place. Let's burn it down.
Yeah, except for that one, we don't think that, but...
Well, not the capital, but there have been times in history where people have destroyed holdings that would normally be considered their own for one reason or another.
Yeah, no, that I'm fine with. And you can do that somewhat. You can always raise cities that aren't your capital.
Yeah, the whole domination thing makes the raising capital just a little iffy.
Well, and the whole diplomacy things makes raising city-states a little iffy.
Yeah.
Reasons for it. I mean, for us to be able to raise capitals without changing the domination victory, let's see, turn 10 or 20, whatever, when you finally get a first settler out, you move that settler over, drop it in a new place, burn your capital. Haha, no one can take my capital.
Well, I think if you decide that you want to be able to raise your capital, then make your capital no longer the capital anymore. Like, remember in Civilization IV, even though people would often do it accidentally, you could build a palace in one of your other cities, and then that would make your capital. Well, go ahead and do that, and then, oh, my former capital is no longer my capital. Now I can raise it.
It should do kind of like it did in Civ IV, where if you got somebody's capital, it just reassigned the next biggest city as their capital.
Well, it does do
so
that.
So if it does that, it's just not permanent.
Yeah, it's not the permanent capital when it comes to domination. No, no, because then domination would be ugly. Because if you're constantly trying to play whack-a-mole, you might as well just say domination victory is wipe everybody out.
I would like to see domination be more of a amount of land controlled victory condition anyway in Civ 5. Call me old fashioned, but you know, that's a true military dominance as opposed to, oh look, this 40 city empire on the other continent just happens to have its capital be coastal, and I've conquered my continent. I win.
I totally agree on that one as well. I think I've said that many times. The only problem with that is culture starts getting tied into that. Now, granted, it would make the reason to build more culture buildings per city more useful because then you can culture spread. And with the great generals now doing culture bombs, that could also start working. So
yeah, it would actually be a lot less painful because when you capture a city, you get that city's culture in Civ 5. So it wouldn't have anywhere near frustrations of Civ 4 with foreign culture just swamping the cities you captured and making it extremely painful to move. That's certainly something that Civ 5 made more accessible and more intuitive is moving an enemy territory and captured cities being usable. So in some respects, you would have an easier time with domination. Yeah, I mean, I guess you would need some culture. Or if you were rich, you could just buy the tiles too. I mean, whatever you need to do to get the land.
I agree that domination victory should probably be focused more on that than going to play pop the capitals. I don't think that was a good change, personally. Although it did come from Civ Rev, so in Civ Rev it works. Well, no, Civ Rev is just fine on the Xbox. When you talk about multiplayer games, it makes sense in that because that is a nice quick way of doing things. For the mainline games, no, not doing all the capitals doesn't quite make sense. Especially if you're like, hey, look, I'm playing OCC. I insta-raise all the capitals, and all I have is my one city. And even though that Civ has conquered the entire planet, I waited, I built a few nukes, and I've got one infantry. Look, I win. I took your capital.
You know, in regards to, you know, destroying or raising your own cities, could apply that strategically. If you were going to lose the city, you could basically burn it, you know, scorched earth kind of policy.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. It's just the capitals I'm against the concept of burning, just because there's too many mechanics all tied to it, because it's not just domination victory that's tied to it. It's a lot of spaceship stuff. There's some wonder stuff. There's some religion stuff, depending on where you put your holy city. There's just a few weird things that you don't want to include in there without making changes to the rest of the game to compensate for it. And knowing the amount of work that would have to go into that versus doing something more useful like fixing multiplayer.
I agree.
Well, yeah, setting that aside, I think, again, I'll go back to being able to build a palace and not something that you can just go insta-buy either.
Yeah.
That is something that you would have to construct. So then you get around that, you know, you want to get into a situation where I'm going to, you know, start constructing my palace in this city, only I'm going to go off of that with one turn left to go, and I'm going to wait until my capital looks like it's going to be taken. Oh, you want a domination victory? Oh, next turn, oh, look at that, it's not my capital anymore. Ha 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 ha.
Yoink.
I realize that there are those issues that you'd need to address, but I think if you could, the construction of the palace and not being able to buy it would mean that you would be able to leave the victory condition alone, the domination victory condition alone, which, yes, I also agree with this kind of holdover from Civilization Revolution, what's up with that? But with other bigger concerns, like Magic was also saying, this is something that you could do in the short term because of other issues, but even it could also work in the long term. Just bring back being able to construct your palace with those other conditions I talked about.
Although, just a random side note, if you do lose your capital, the palace automatically moves to the new city that's claimed to be your capital. So, that I mean, even that would have to get a little adjustment if you can build your palace somewhere else. Otherwise, the code will be looking at going, well, I'm automatically moving the palace to somewhere else. Oh, wait, you built it somewhere else. Oh, no. So, there's a lot of things to think about. It needs to be thought about carefully, obviously. And, yes, there's some short-term stuff that can be done to mess around with it, but there's more important underlying problems with just something so simple as being allowed to burn a particular city or not.
I see what you're saying. Although city-states, man, like, they tie into the whole diplomacy victory, but so what? If you kill the city-states, there is no more diplomacy victory. What's wrong with that?
It causes problems. For the diplomacy side of things, I mean, if you conquer a bunch of city-states, they can be reconquered and liberated. That all works quite nicely. I mean, Austria in the game now can soak out city-states with diplomatic marriage, but if you do enough of that, the number of votes required drops. So at least that's connected to that more appropriately.
Yeah, I'm fine with the city-state thing not being able to raise city-states because the Magic was saying you could go back and you could liberate them. So it's not a matter of, oh, you know, so much for that victory condition, no more city-state. It's just a measure of then, okay, yes, you actually have to go get it back. There is effort, but it is possible. That I'm okay with being able to say that you can't raise city-states. And sure, we could talk about changing the mechanic, but I don't really think the mechanic needs to be changed there.
No, I agree. At least not at the moment. The actual diplomatic victory could still use some work, at least on the AI side. But I don't think the current process for city-states voting, and then you can at least conquer them to get them out of the vote. But there needs to be a way to bring them back, because if you soak every single city-state out of existence, now you're down to the AIs. And they are not exactly reliable, even when they're your best friend.
Disc 78 said in the 2K forum, sorry for raising an old, long-dead poll thread, because this was from 2010, shortly after the game was released, but the thread wasn't dead, Disc 78. It was just stagnant. It hadn't closed, it hadn't died, it hadn't been eliminated, and we appreciate you raising it.
Yay, Necro.
Thread Necromancer.
I give you an internet cookie.
Ooh, cookie.
One cookie, two cookie. Speaking about cookies.
Three cookies.
Ooh, do you have three cookies? Because I know at this point, some people really want a cookie. This is from the Civ 5 Gods and Kings section of the CFC forums. They're starting to question whether or not we even bother using iron anymore, at least before frigates. So the question from Kamikazes, not the actual Kamikaze, but a different non-mod Kamikazes, starts asking, do you use swordsmen now? I'm finding myself not really caring if I have any iron, at least until I get frigates. I tend not to beeline too deep into the tech tree early on, so typically I have trapping wheel, masonry, bronze working, blah, blah, blah. It gives two options for early war. I can pass up spearmen, build warriors, and research iron. If I have iron, I can do the swordsman rush. Great. If you don't have iron, I tend to, you know, plant a city, trade mine, trade for it, whatever, to go get it. Okay, that's option one. Option two is I build spearmen, which are more powerful than warriors, and pass up ironworking and go for horseback riding, math, currency. And you forgot to mention drama and poetry in that list as well. Those unlock civil service, which brings you into the medieval era, and you get pikemen. And of course, pikemen are all of one or two drink combat strength more than the swordsmen at this point. So that's the question is, do you use swordsmen, i.e. option one, go for ironworking and get iron, or do you just skip it and go to pikemen? And he says he goes for option number two, and that's pretty much what a lot of the first page worth of posts are agreeing with. Although there are some people who are at least voting for the go use iron. But unfortunately, I think a lot of the arguments in this thread are fallaciously based, because they're trying to compare swordsmen to pikemen. Pikemen are a medieval era unit, not a classical era unit. So you shouldn't really be connecting those two together. Plus, on top of that, there's an argument in here that saying that it's, you know, it's almost as fast to go to civil service as it is to get to ironworking.
Oh.
And I'd like to point out that ironworking is three whole techs, and while ironworking itself is a very expensive classical tech, you've got about 11 techs to get to civil service, including some rather expensive drama and poetry and currency and all the other stuff in there. Not to mention, if you want to get to civil service, you have to go to philosophy, which is off the line, to go get your national college. Yeah, it's either that or please up your difficulty level.
Yes,
would be my answer.
And like you also said, that by the time you get to pikemen, they're 1 point stronger than swordsmen. And we haven't gotten to the consideration of, well, if you have swordsmen, probably been using them, and they probably have some experience, so that 1 point stronger could actually not be true, even.
Yeah.
What about option three, which is build archers? I just use archers personally.
Option one, option two, I reject your options and choose my own. No, I agree. Composite bowmen are pretty solid. But even composite bowmen are only 7 defense, so warriors can crush them eventually if they get close enough.
Chariot archers.
Yeah, still useless.
Yep.
Except for,
yes.
Well, they're not that useless. Their combat strength got boosted, their range strength got boosted, especially for all the unique units. So chariot archers are about on power with composite bows, a little less, but that whole not being able to go through rough terrain thing is a bit of a pain in the butt.
Yes.
Swordsmen do upgrade. They continue on down to the units that you want to have as opposed to end up being lancers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was also part of the my objection to the comparisons in this thread. Swordsman versus horseman versus spearman and composite bow. That is the rock, paper, scissors style thing. Spearmen are weaker than swordsmen by 4 points, give or take. So there you go. You've already got a boost to your swordsman versus the spear. Spear plus 50% versus horses makes its combat strength higher than the horsemen. So there you go. And the horsemen are fast, so you can get mass flankings on the swords and win. There you go, rock, paper, scissors. Everybody kills catapults and archers too quickly, so it doesn't really matter. But when it comes to the pike, yeah, it's better, but it's a medieval era unit. Not sure how many times I can say that. In Civ 5 Vanilla, where they were equal strength to the swordsmen, I think it completely negated the point that there is a different era going on. Plus, pikemen no longer have plus 100% versus horse unit, so they do need a slightly higher base combat strength so that they can stand up versus the knight at 20. And the real rock, paper, scissors there, again, is the longsword versus the pike. And the longsword is a good 5 combat strength higher than the pikeman. Pikeman versus the knight, which, if you get enough promotions on your knights, you can kind of ignore, but at least puts pikemen up to 24 versus the knight's 20. And knights are just really fast. And again, you have the, okay, you have a very slow longsword, and my knights can surround and kill.
Surround and pound.
Yeah.
But strange. It's kind of odd to me. It always has been a little bit. That you have a strict cap based on resources for both this line and the mounted line, but you really don't for the pure line. It makes that balance a little awkward because you can only have, say, 6 to 12 swords or, you know, like 4 to 8 horses, whatever you happen to have. But you could build as many spears and pikes as you could afford, essentially. And so it makes those units tend to be spammed a lot more, at least by a certain set of opponents.
I think that might be left over from vanilla, where if you didn't have iron, you were completely boned. And there was like, that might be why it just kind of like left over.
Yeah, but since catapults and trebuchets no longer need iron, if you have 6 iron, you can have 6 swords and a million catapults.
Yeah. Rows of spears, archers, and catapults.
And by the time you've built that up, that long sword's crushing all the way through it. It takes a long time to build that much spam.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's not that easy to push into spam, though, unless they've changed gods and kings mechanics significantly, which my understanding is they have. But
yeah,
it always seemed like it was a little bit difficult, even to even before, to press into a couple units that are surrounding you and still attack while being like flanked like that and shot at.
Oh yeah, it's still dangerous for that. But if you've got clearly superior units, then yes, it's not as bad as it was in vanilla with the minimum 1 damage on a 10-point system.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, and I also saw people in this thread saying, I don't want to go towards iron working because so often I don't have iron and I can't get iron. So I'm just going to forget about that heartache and go down towards civil service to get pikemen. Well, okay, you have to get bronze working before you get iron working so you can build spears. You should have your composite bowman from construction, which, oh, by the way, also is along those comparable lines there. So you go in with the combined arms that we've talking about before. You don't have iron? Okay, so you can't make the swordsman, but you can make spearmen. You could even have some warriors that you were hoping to be able to upgrade to swordsmen, but you can't do that. That's fine. Go in with composite bowman, bombard it down, or perhaps also with construction, maybe get some catapults, position them in there, attack city, I'll take out the units and run a city if they're there, attack the city, take the city when the hit points on the city are down to next to nothing, move in with your spear and your warrior. And also, you have to go to get to even bronze working, you have to have mining. And that's going to give you a production boost, which is also going to help your ability to actually construct these units in the first place. And again, back to what Magin was saying, we are talking about the classical era. Now, I suppose I could see you maybe not prioritizing ironworking so much in the earlier game if there really wasn't anybody you thought you could attack, because you could well defend yourself, and arguably more so against, say, barbarians, by having archers and then composite bowmen. But whether it's going on the offense or even being able to defend yourself, perhaps, with an army, it's just, this whole argument is just, I'm thinking, wow, what?
Yeah. Swords and longswords are much better meat shields than pikes and spears. Plus, pikes turned into lancers, so you can't keep them around forever anymore. So they're not an actual replacement for the melee line.
I also think that another key part of this whole discussion is that people are looking for the unit, as opposed to trying to build a very diverse army, you know, like with different parts to play into that whole rock, paper, scissor thing.
Well, I mean, everybody loves to just go, okay, what is the one thing I build?
And even I'm just going to spam this 11 billion times.
Yeah. Tell me that this game is so simple, I can build one unit, and then that'll be awesome. What's the one unit this
void
time?
Void rays. If you have void rays, you'll win any 5 possibly encounter.
Yeah, except for this, you know, very low-tech unit that shoots up. Spam a lot.
Spearman versus void ray.
No.
Yeah, that's one weak spot.
No, the counter to void rays is actually knights, not spearmen. Spearmen get the tanks. The knights go for the helicopters and such.
And at least for me, in a deity level game, I will see AI tossing swords at me long before I can go anywhere near pikemen. Actually, I usually get it about the time that I'm going for philosophy. Is usually when I start seeing swordsmen coming at me. Now, if you can back that difficulty level down, you'll probably get a little bit further up on Immortal, and then even at Emperor, you'll be close to Civil Service by the time the AI can send a bunch of swordsmen at you. But still, you're without the pike. So if you were going to fight early, go swords. If you were choosing to hide in a corner, go pikes.
Archers.
Actually, yeah. Archers. Now, I know. I'm actually really bad for that. I tend to ignore ironworking when I'm not going for a straight-up war victory, because I just spam archers.
Speaking of your comfort level, what about placing citadels offensively? Citadel, of course, is the unique terrain improvement for the Great General. And as Messix writes, the GG tile improvement has a nice buff in Gods and Kings. It can be placed in your borders or any adjacent tile to your borders. The citadel will change the tile and all adjacent tiles to your territory like a culture bomb ability that the great artist used to have. In addition, the citadel will grant a defensive bonus to your units and cause damage to nearby enemy units. Playing into the Renaissance scenario, the Celts have declared war on my English civilization. Not entirely unexpected, I must say. The Celts have 4 cities, and I only have 1. I've been building up units in preparation for the attack. The war opens a defensive war where my melee units act as meat shields for my ranged units who kill off her invasion force. Then the first great general appears. I march that north and place a citadel in her territory, effectively cutting off the southern city for reinforcements. As I organize my forces to take that city, she loses a lot of units to my fortified citadel, augmented by a couple of composite archers and composite bowmen. It isn't long before a second great general appears, who I used to place a second citadel north of the first. Now I can safely bombard the capital with 2 catapults and rest assured that her waves of units will die at the walls of my citadels. The one is next to her city, so this has the added bonus of killing off her annoying catapult inside the city due to damage from the citadel after a few turns. Yes, and as KRC adds in the thread, yes, you can build citadels in enemy territory, but you must be adjacent to your own territory, and as Smallfish further adds, that's how you handle opponents with the Great Wall.
Yes. I've been trying to teach Dan about this, and every time he sees the Great Wall, I'm like, great generals, go make citadels, plow right through.
That's still like my solution. Just kill units, and be like, give me cities for peace, and then you wait 10 turns and declare on them again.
Yeah, the Great Wall, it must be adjacent to your own territory. Sometimes you can't actually get a city in there in order to be able to have it too adjacent, and that still doesn't affect the greater issues that I have with the Great Wall, but I'm going to avoid that event for today.
Offensive citadels, awesome. Good use of generals now, because they can't start Golden Ages anymore. Of course, you can also use them just to claim land without dropping it in somebody's territory and starting a war. many times where I've looked over and gone, oh, that one luxury is on the sixth tile and I don't feel like building a city over there because it's garbage. Hey, you know what I got? I got a citadel. It'll go get it.
Of course, you can probably expect the AA to contact you and say, you know, if you're trying to find a way to start a war, you're doing a good job of it. You just go, yeah, whatever.
I actually had a game a while back where there was a strip of just garbage land with, like, no food, no nothing, but it had a couple uranium on it. And so I chained citadels to grab the uranium and forgot about it. And then, like, 100 turns later, someone declares on me, and that was their only route to get to me. So by the time they manipulated their military, one unit per turn, through that area, they were all dead. There was, like, four citadels that just chewed their whole army up. It was pretty amazing.
Yep. Actually, citadel walls and other stuff like that, always very, very nice.
Why didn't they just attack the citadels directly?
Because it's AI.
Well, I've seen the AI pillage citadels. They do that, and they've been doing that for a while, but they don't always do it, which is somewhat unfortunate.
It was like hills and trees, so they had really limited movement. I mean, it was just, they got decimated from it. There was units taking hits from multiple citadels in the same turn. Like, it was ridiculous. And I have no idea why they didn't just pillage them.
So what you're saying, Travis, is this was suicide by citadel.
Yeah, in fact, I probably would have lost because they kind of blindsided me. My forces were elsewhere, like raping and pillaging, so they would have totally got me by surprise. But fortunately for me, they chose the wrong route.
Your citadels work even when you forget they do.
They had superior forces. I think I had like one, you know, ranged unit, like a Gatling gun or something, and like a leftover Lancer. And they just basically cleaned up a whole, you know, military full of like advanced units. And I have employed your citadel spam to burrow through the Great Wall tactic as well. That's pretty effective.
It's really nice, especially since it's now your territory, so you can now heal in your own territory.
Today we're going to discuss a post on the Civ Fanatics forum by Backler, which is suggesting a new naval unit, which is the Icebreaker. He says, since so many of maps consist of northern and southern ice, would an icebreaker that would leave behind a path through the ice be appropriate? And opinions vary, and people talk about basically the maps wrapping, but I think it's a good idea. I've kind of been saying that we should be able to do that.
Be able to rename the unit into really lame jokes. As you plow through the ice, you have to have a lame joke on your unit because it's an icebreaker. It's the double purpose then. And it has to be excessively lame. Otherwise, you don't break as much ice.
Oh, I can help you with the lame just in general. Icebreaker.
God.
A lot of people seem to request that it would be a promotion for a naval unit, and people are talking about different kinds of ice, you know, some that you could break through and some that you couldn't. Just seems like it's kind of, you know, it's a neat idea, but it starts getting complicated when everyone starts throwing their ideas into it.
Different types of ice. Oh.
Yeah, it's an idea.
Blue ice, white ice.
One use thing that's kind of like a fishing boat and it'll break through one tile of ice. That way you don't be excessive about it.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Because it sucks when you have to sail around an entire continent, just, you know, and you, there's only like one block that's keeping you from going that route. So there, something would need to be done. And as far as like digging, you know, channels, like I said, you have to build a city. It's the same situation. You build this crappy city just so you have the ability to go through the middle of a continent. You know, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, but from what I remember, they've always tried to shy away from the terraforming style stuff. At least for Civ 5. It's kind of linked to a bigger argument about being able to terraform. And a lot of people definitely want it. But I think an icebreaker, I mean, realistically, icebreakers in the real world, if you want to go that way, they never keep anything open year-round. It's just at the time, not even for one ship, because you need multiple icebreakers to get ships out of trouble and all that other stuff. So Basically, people want to wipe out huge volumes of land. If you take one hex to be an actual land area worth of ice, and no one's ever done that, even now. And we're in the late information age.
Well, if you go with what Mackie had said, you know, you could make a civilian unit because you can stack those. And perhaps if you stack the civilian unit with a naval unit, you could allow it to pass through so many blocks of ice or something without actually removing anything.
Yeah, that's a different way to think about it.
Yeah, having that attached to a civilian, I mean, some people suggest a promotion to combat unit, but I could see where you might not want to get into that. And the fact that, yeah, that we've got the escorts now, there you go. Oh, the sub, which of course can go under ice.
Yeah, sub.
You tend not to use subs for icebreaking, unless they're going straight up. And even
yeah.
Then.
I'm not saying they're using the icebreaker, say they're escorting the icebreaker.
Yeah.
And you might attach it to an existing unit rather than create a whole new one.
I can see where the frustration comes from, because I've had those starts where I'm on the south side and then it's like ice on both directions, so I can't even get out with my capital, but I worry about the mechanics problems that'll arise. I mean, the world's not circular and everything, I don't care about that. Obviously, it's not circular, and it's not really going to help much, but how to implement it properly without breaking a ton of stuff is a little more questionable.
I like W.P. Fossil's point in the thread that says, since the Great Admiral can't go across land, they're useless if they spawn in an ice-locked city.
It's true. I've also been in situations where I've had resources that I couldn't get because I couldn't launch a boat into that area that was blocked off from ice.
Yeah, so either then you're either forced to, well, I can't improve that, or I guess I've got to situate my city along that coast, but then I'm not going to be able to, have any, meaningful navy come from that, or I'm not going to be able to access, resources that I want on the other side, so I just have to let it go. That part itself, you could just, add something to the script so that that wouldn't happen, that you wouldn't, oh, there's no resource there, ice locked, I'm not really going to care anyway. But there's that too.
Perhaps you could use a worker to basically do what a workboat would do, but maybe it would, consume the unit or something, in a situation like that, I don't know.
Well, there's, a Phil-approved comment in the chat, and I can say that without even having Phil necessarily know what that is. Ciro says, maybe you should be able to nuke the ice.
Well, that would certainly melt it, yes. Kind of permanently.
I don't know about permanently.
No.
You'd just have frozen irradiated water, but you would certainly break the ice for a while.
For a couple of months.
It lasts two or three turns, what?
Oh, that's great. You could use a nuke, and then that would be a great conversation starter because you're breaking the ice.
Ah, yeah, in a big way.
Have a blast, Herb.
Puntastic. Woo! That's the whole reason I chose this thread, was for that pun. Yep. Nothing else required. We can.
How long have you been planning that?
Microseconds.
Because actually, this thread looks like it was necroed as well. 2010. Someone necroed this month, actually.
Oh, there you go. Polycast episode 153, brought to you by Necromancer's Nuts.
Because some of our listeners apparently need to join that.
Speaking about necromancy, talking about Canada this time. Ooh. Or at least it keeps popping up. Our city-state leagues. So, Locke's Donkey, which is starting to get really bad thoughts in my head. and this is actually how it starts. In my head, I've been dreaming up a contemporary world scenario. And one thing has started to bug me. Canada.
What?
Troll thread. Can't believe Dan put this one up. Anytime Canada gets brought up, it's always trolled. I don't know why. Which is better than everybody else, and they don't understand it.
You said it. I was too modest to say it.
That's okay. Anyways, he goes on to talk about the fact that it's, not one of those big empires. And it's not, okay? Canada is not an empire. We're Dominion. Slight difference.
Yeah, definitely not an empire.
Yeah. So it doesn't work to have a single city-state be Canada, because that is dumb, and right now we have Quebec City, and that's even a bad choice. But, oops, I'm from Montreal. It's okay, I can say that. Anyways, having representations of larger non-empirical groups over the history is a lot harder to do if you're with just a single city. So the question comes down to, can we add a system where you can have multiple city-state cities, all to territorially contiguous? And then a follow-up question to that is, do we go for it has to be exactly one type of city-state, or can it be multiple city-states types within that large group that you all have to get discount for bonuses, i.e., you know, three different city-state types for the price of two, that sort of thing? No one's ever replied to this thread. So
quick, necro it.
Yeah. This is a minor necro. Apparently Dan was done with the major necro. So this is a minor necro.
It says July 19th, 2012.
Yep, so it's pretty minor. It even meets the definition of minor, honestly. It's not even a month.
Well, a less than a month-year-old would be a minor.
I made a reply to the thread just now, so you're actually inaccurate saying it's never been replied to.
Oh, see, it's a troll thread. I knew it was a troll thread. anyways, the question is, do we bring back minor civs and not just small city-states? My thought line is, as long as it's not horribly abusive and they have different powers than city-states right now, because it's because of certain mechanics, again, like the getting 25% of your city state's beaker per turn when you're going through patronage. If you have a massive metal power city state empire, that could be problematic in the balance perspective. Though technically you can create metal powers very easily. Just have your city state attack a bunch of cities near them, and they don't always burn them. Sometimes they'll keep them, and you can very possibly get city states with 3, 4, 5, 6 cities easily. Definitely done that
and
before.
Still get their research.
You get all their stuff except for the, well, it's only 25% research. You don't get their money or anything like that, but that's well.
So, if you're Austria.
Yeah, you can take the whole freaking thing in one shot. Very, very easy way to get things done.
I'm not really a huge fan of city states to begin with, so making them more and bigger and more complicated isn't really something I'd be into. If I could raise the city-states, I'd be perfectly okay with them.
You just really want to burn cities, don't you?
I
like this. I support your sentiments. I approve.
Phil likes you that much more now.
New victory condition. No one's alive.
Due relations.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Where's the fifth?
You're Canadian, that doesn't work.
No, we don't take a fifth here. I take a 2-4.
2x4? I'll use a 2x4.
No, not that 2-4.
Slightly different. But
depends how it's used.
Yeah.
You guys have these great segues, and then you just completely crash and burn.
Yay for editing.
That's part of our charm, Travis. Pretty good.
Editing is good.
So wait till later when we go through the possible uses of a 2x4 in detail. Thank you for joining us for Polycast episode 153. I am the Mean Team, and I stand by your icebreakers, by the way. And today on the show, we've been joined by regular co-hosts Dan Q.
I did know that I remind myself of me when I speak.
Maka Lua.
Need to break some ice over some people's heads in here.
Mad Dijin.
Here's some coffee. It'll warm your heart.
And guest co-host Travis.
Yeah, I still got nothing.
Recorded July 28th, 2012. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.